And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 141.
141.
I am Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Run.
We are your host for Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Today, our guest is a very funny man, a good friend of mine from comedy, from being Lyft drivers at one point at the same time. A funny man, comedian, and a manager over at the Comedy Underground right now, the very funny Robert Pitty. He is here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, Robert. This was a great hour plus. It's a longer episode.
Yeah, it was fun. We just could not stop talking.
We couldn't. That's always like, a pleasure.
Yeah,
there's a part of me that just believes that I miss talking to people so much that I'm like, I'm going to miss you guys so much when you're gone now. And I got as much out as I could just for this. I don't want to feel like I used you guys at all.
I don't feel used. I was, but, well, if you enjoyed,
maybe listen back to the tape, maybe you'll feel it then. I appreciate it.
This was fun. We talked to Robert. We did get into later on in the episode of his origin story. He answered the world famous 7 questions, which you can take a clip at. We talked PlayStation 5 controversies of reselling them and what it's doing to the public. We talked about the Biden cabinet. What the diversity looking at? A whole host of topics. A comedy. We got
sleeping patterns.
Sleeping patterns and how to sleep.
Honestly, I am a little nervous for everyone to know how I slept for so many years before the weighted blanket. But you know what? That's my teaser to all of you.
They're going to be delighted to have some great tips now. And feel free to let us know in the comments, you guys. Let us know which tip helps you out. Or how you sleep. I want to know. I do. I'm curious.
I also want to know that. I will be reading the comment section almost specifically. To see, to feel less alone or feel more alone than ever. This is your choice, people, fellow listeners.
Or to fight, as we'll find out. Today's episode, as always, brought to you by Silas Lindenstein at Skyline Properties. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you can contact with Silas, who also co-hosts this show. You can actually listen to my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. It's a podcast dedicated to teaching you how to buy a home, to be educated and empowered and buy with gusto. Okay. Well, you can find that at yourbuyingahome.com or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, whatever medium. It's also brought to you by
another podcast. What? Beyond Technique with Samantha Rund. And of course, that's an offshoot of Beyond Technique Coaching. And so if you're looking for a coach to help you use performance skills to help improve your life, voice, body, and mind, auditions, scene work, public speaking, relationship stuff, interview prep, Zoom meetings, all of that good stuff. You can always reach out to me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com.
And those are two great ways to support the show by using those services for something you need anyway, right? You need a house, you need coaching to make that money, make that bread. Get it. You can also become one of our supporters at our Patreon page. You go to patreon.com/blackandahalf and you can join the inner circle. You can join the League of Extraordinary Listeners for just as little as $1 a month. That's like 25 cents an episode.
100 pennies.
Yeah. That's not even counting the movie review episodes. And then for a little bit more, you can join our inner circle and become an inner circle member, which will get exclusives like advanced screenings of the films we produce or videos. Shout out to Inner Circle members, Tara Widener, Keith Nagel, and Stefan Ward. Thank you so much for your continued support and all of our Patreon members. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating on this. A 5-star rating would be ideal. and a nice review, and it helps other people find this extraordinary show. Support Black podcasts. Support. I don't want to like guilt you into that, but what have you done for Black people lately?
Oh boy.
Yeah. I went there.
You did.
Yeah. So
I just want to know how you want to sleep, and I want to know what you think about our food choices later on, but yeah, you can support us too. Thank you.
Support us too.
Yeah.
Okay. So, open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to this episode number 141, Robert Pitty, and I Pity the Fool.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Did you say the cool side of the pillow?
Yeah. How you turn over the pillow and the other side's colder.
And I don't think I've done that, but the second you said that, I was like, that sounds
delightful. Someone sleeps well, humble brag. Wow.
Yeah, no, for me, it's all about the socks on and then kicking the socks off. Because my feet are usually, like my hands and feet, I don't feel cold, but they usually, like, if I were to like shake your hand or something, it would be like, why is your hand like ice? A lot of the times, not all the time, but so yeah, I definitely have to go to bed with socks on. And then somewhere in the middle of the night, I warm up, kick the socks off, and it's
interesting. I cannot have anything touching my feet. I am a socks off person. I've got a regimen to go to bed. But I'm not cold at all. Like even temperatures throughout, I'm just I have a weighted blanket and stuff like that, and that was a game changer for me. That just the feeling that someone might be cuddling me, that's what I needed the whole time. And I didn't know that. I didn't, just some form of affection throughout the night, or just some artificial form of affection throughout the night
it's theoretical possible.
Yeah, and the weighted blanket is a thing. Like I'm somebody that also needs like some weight in order, like even on a hot night, I can't fall asleep if it's just sheets. Like almost my whole life, I need like a stack of some blankets or some like weight. And then, you know, I'll get hot in the middle of the night and throw them off. But
I didn't even realize I was doing this the whole entire time, where I used to, before the weighted blanket, of course, I used to shove a pillow into the corner of my bed and then I would lay against it just to have that form of light pressure the entire time. And like, I was literally like it was clear which pillow I was using to do it because it was indented and beaten up. But like, I had to switch out a pillow on a regular basis just to get in that, that weight, for most of my life. And now weighted blanket, just so much better.
Yeah.
Also, I did just admit to being like maybe one of the loneliest sounding kids ever.
Well, I think like most people can identify with the need for a weighted blanket during this time.
If you're not lonely right now, and you're not like, if you didn't have a live-in partner, or married or something at this point, if you're not lonely, you're not doing it right.
Yeah. Yep. If you're not, like, yeah, right. If you've been living alone for all of this time,
if you feel down on yourself and lonely, it means you're being a good person.
Yep.
Right. Dexter would be fine.
You're like,
this would be Dexter's time to shine.
Yeah.
You could say Dexter, right? Think of all
the people he could take out right now.
So easy. So easy. And he's a germaphobe, so he wouldn't get COVID while he did it. You know that.
That's right.
You know he'd figure it out. He'd mask up twice. One for the killing and one for just precautionary.
Yeah, yeah.
I am okay, we've been recording, so just last couple of minutes, fine. Cool. Like, I know we talked about it last week, but like, I feel like now, like before 9 months ago ish, mm-hmm. right? Like every episode we were talking about a little bit more like, oh yeah, the death's coming on. We're all worried about it. And now I feel like we're on the other end, like, so we're kind of in the final stretch of this. How are you feeling? Do you get more optimistic each day? Or
I have a timeline. That's what I'm excited about, is just knowing there is a time. There is a time when the vaccine will be out. We will have it. We will be back to normal. But the other side of it feels so optimistic to hear out loud that I don't know what's going to happen in what I'm assuming it's going to be like the next 6 months before we really have it available and used. And we have everybody up to snuff as far as getting that vaccine up and running. Mm-hmm. And in those next 6 months, how many people are going to take the fact that just the vaccine is out as an opportunity to not do what they still need to be doing for the next 6 months, even though it should be the downhill stretch? It feels like people are going to use an excuse.
Oh, well, the vaccine's coming out. I'm going to. Well,
so
we did it, guys. We did it.
Actual timeline for the quote back to normal.
There is sort of. I mean, they have some projections. What have you heard?
Because I watched the news, like, I don't know, Sunday, and well, today's Tuesday. I guess it would have been Saturday, Sunday, and then I was like, I need a break. So, like, I know there's a vaccine coming. I know it's going, like, the UK's starting their stuff first.
Today,
as far as like the timeline,
it's going to be a couple weeks probably until it's approved to go out. But they expect it to be.
We're testing it on British people first, to make sure we're okay here in America.
See if they turn into mutants or zombies.
Need to make sure the UK guinea pigs are good.
But then they already have like ready to go. Like their stock, Pfizer's so confident with it that they're basically getting all the shipments ready to go. And as soon as it's ready to go, it's like jamming. Though we don't have that many Pfizer vaccines, apparently. We have the Moderna, which is actually, you know, there's two big ones. The one we didn't order as much of, which is the one that's ready to go, is more. And it has a 95% effectiveness rate, they believe. Yep. The one that has 90% effective rate is the one that is allowed. Doesn't have to be sub-zero temperature. It has to be cold, but not sub-zero.
Right. So, and it's a thing about shipping and everything
It costs twice as much as the other one. The one we ordered costs twice as much. I wonder who has stock in that one.
Because I did hear about like how there's the concern too for storing it. Because a lot of places don't have these sub-zero places to store the stuff.
Even in England, they were saying that they're going to have a lot of people from the rural areas have to come in to get it. Because they said that, like, I don't know why, but when they ship it to places, they have to ship 1,000 doses at a time. So if your town doesn't have 1,000 people that are going to come take it, they're not even going to send it there. Because they're like, we don't want to waste this, so you need to come in. So with that sub-zero one, there's few facilities that will have it, be able to carry it. So people will have to come in or go to major cities to get those taken, which, you know, the people outside of the city aren't the ones taking it seriously anyway. So who knows how bad they'll need it. And the city folk need it. They'll take it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's down the street.
Everybody just round up in the town square and take a syringe.
Drop trowel, start sticking it. Gosh, I wonder where it is. I haven't thought of that yet.
I hadn't even considered that either.
You wonder where what is?
The shot.
Where the injection is.
Oh, I just heard you say drop trowel. And I don't know. I was watching people getting it injected in their arm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe they show your butt on the news. Because
I believe there's some shots. There's some shots for some reason. My wife would actually know. If she was nearby, I would ask, but I'm in my studio. She's an MA, so they have to do injection. Mm-hmm. There's some reason that some have to go into your buttocks rather than.
Doesn't it get into the bloodstream a lot faster through there?
Maybe that's it.
It's a little bit faster for the circulatory system to get more. Yeah. Maybe not, I don't think it's centralized, but it's it gets into the bloodstream a little bit quicker.
That would make sense. But I think, and there must be something about the vaccine that it has
it's
to
for the Maximus
get around fast
effect,
or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a time that almost everyone got shots in their butt, like all the time. I haven't had a shot in my butt since I was.
Every single sports thing that said no steroids whatsoever when I was in high school, every single one was like, and they put it in their butt. And that was like their fear mongering tactic. Because all of us in high school were like, well, we don't want anything
nothing in my butt.
How dare you? How dare you insinuate that I might want something in my butt?
Nothing near my butt. Nothing.
Yep.
I am.
How dare you?
How dare you, sir? But I will say my optimism, I've been so optimistic since Biden got elected.
Yes. Oh, like, that's been huge.
He's such a calming presence. Like, people want to call him Sleepy Joe. And I'm like, you know what? Give me the doozer. I'm fine. I'm calm right now. Like, what? Is that a bad thing? If he makes you feel like, oh, he makes me, just makes me so calm. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, why? I don't need a someone to rile me up.
I would love to hibernate for the next 4 years and come out of it, and it's springtime and everything's better the way it's supposed to be. And that would be awesome. That is the way that's the way to go.
And I don't know where you stood, Robert. There's a lot of people that have been, they were a little hesitant about Biden being in. I was fine with him from the
I moment. Voted for him.
Yeah.
I voted for him. And am I still going to be going to protests and stuff like that to like, of course I am. Okay. But it had something to do with the fact that Trump was in office and his running on racial propaganda and stuff like that. Absolutely. That absolutely had something to do with it. But do I think that Biden's just going to swoop in and fix the system that was in place before Trump was in office? I mean, Trump definitely bolstered things and made things worse, but that system was in place and he was a part of creating that system back in the day. So there's still things that we have to hold him accountable for as well. Is it better? Absolutely. Holy, I didn't realize that my right hand had been clenched for 4 years, the whole 4 years, the entire time. And it's just, oh my God, I didn't realize that this forearm is actually bigger just due to like stress falling myself. It's crazy.
That's funny. Did you, have you been watching like the picks for like the staffing?
A little bit, not too much. I have been doing my best not to watch the news because both of my parents will tell me everything that was on the news and, oh, he's doing it. Like everything. I have CNN. It's just in a very raised old voice that it comes at me, and it's very kind, but it's very, we're afraid right now. And it's because he's crazy. Uh-huh. And that's most of the news for me. That comes from my parents most days. So I haven't really gotten into any great details. I have heard first Black Attorney General and communications, but all women leaders, which is awesome. I've enjoyed looking at I went through because I knew this was a topic today, and I was like, oh yeah, diversity, finally.
Yeah. He's doing it. Like, I know.
Yeah.
I understand some people are mad because some of these people have business experience. Just think, I have some Facebook friends who are more left than me that we have private messaging, and they're very unhappy about business people getting put in.
Yep.
But I'm like, I'm always like, part of me is like, well, who's qualified for this? We've just had such an era of unqualified people, and I get they're civil servants and stuff, but like, mm-hmm. I'm like, but who, I don't know. You know, like they say LBJ was the only one who, we talked about this last week, I think, LBJ was needed to do the Civil Rights Act because he was a racist.
Yeah.
He was a racist. So you needed him, to get the Civil Rights Act. I think also to go after polluters and stuff, you kind of need someone who's been working with them. They're the only ones who are going to fix it because it's going to be like this, like oh, he's going to be friendly to us. And they're like, pow, no, we're not. All right. That's how it's going to.
That would be great. Here's the thing, though, is like every single time that there is a business person, and I do swing pretty far left. Every time a business person gets added into it, my immediate thought in my head is, what's in it for the people around that guy that he would take this position to? Because there's a part of me that's like, are they trying to get inside information to see how things fall business wise? And that's why they want somebody doing these types of things. Like, I'm so beat up with, I mean, politicians in general taking stocks out on things that they see coming and stuff like that, that as soon as I see anyone working in a civil servant type manner, there's this part of me, especially when they already have money. So there's this part of me that's like, and I hate to say it, but most of the time I don't see it happening out of the goodness of their hearts. So it definitely has this fear effect for me.
How about that? Like, Elizabeth Warren does not have to be a senator.
No,
she has no reason to be a senator financially.
No, not at this point.
I think there's a lot of people that when you've hit a certain amount of money, you know you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And so then you look at, well, what can I do now? What am I going to do? Like, I want to, like, they're not, we're not, you know, some people, they go and they start doing stand-up comedy because they don't know what to do with their life. And some people are like, you know, I have these connections and I could probably, I could make some things better.
So I gotta be honest.
Go do that.
As soon as you said that comedy is just like, I don't know what to do anymore. If Biden all of a sudden just decided, he was like, you know, he's one year into being the president. And he just looks over at Kamala and he's just like, you know what? My heart's just not in it. But you know what? Where I feel my direction going? Open mics. Let's go hit up Jai Tai. I would love that.
That would be wonderful.
I want to see it happen. But also I don't want to follow Joe Biden because I don't see it as being
that would not be
like, first off, commanding of the room, everyone's going to watch. Yeah. There's no question on that. But also I don't see him being super entertaining. I don't want to follow him at an open mic.
And,
like, I can't see
Biden hair for him to smell. So
I don't anymore. I could. I could grow it back for him. If I can be his feature, I'll grow my hair back. I will grow my hair back just to feature.
Samantha.
Yo.
At this point, does it matter to you as a woman that the communication staff is going to be all female? Does that even matter to you?
Wow. I don't even know what the communication staff was before.
Like,
but
press secretary and then the communications director, people writing all the speeches and
like,
doing
what
all
was
the,
it? What was it normally?
Well, it's never had been all male or it's never been all female before.
Well, right. But like, what were the percentages before? Like, I'm in favor of there being at least 50% or more of women on the communications team. Cause generally we communicate better, you know? So yeah.
Oh, just but throwing that out there.
Yes.
Huh?
No, for sure. I would say I would be in favor of 50% or more.
Yeah.
So I thought it was exciting, but I didn't necessarily know that I would have said like no men should have been in it. But then again, it's not like I was following and knew who was up for the job and picking this person over that person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it meant for representation wise, like, sometimes I wonder, like, well, these are positions I never see anyway, so I don't know if it would matter. I don't know, but I guess they'll be at the press circuits and stuff, so eventually you
And I don't want to say something unpopular right now, which you know I'm about to because I prefaced it like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, on, like Samantha. I'm definitely a feminist, but I'm not somebody who just like will just pick a woman over a man just because they're a woman. I'm not going to assume that they're better for a job than a man. So that's why I'm saying
I always assume they're better than a man.
I usually do too, actually.
Because I've met some really shitty women in my life and I've met some really shitty men. So I'm just saying, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to judge you based off of your character and let's just see what you do. But in terms of communication, that's why I'm making that generalization. Generally, women are better at communication. Not always, but that's why I would say 50% or more. Yeah. First time it's been 100%. Pretty interested to see how that goes.
And I agree with you that anybody can be bad or good. But if I have nothing to go on, I will pick the woman. Because I'm like, no, she's probably better. Like, if I have no other thing to judge somebody on, the woman's going to show up.
For any job?
I'm trying to think of a position that I
had to pick my doctor this way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I pick women. Female doctors. I've never had a male doctor.
Bring me a female doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That is how I feel now, just based off of some.
There's no empathy.
But it's based off of bad treatment from male doctors. Not all male doctors, but after a few too many times of them not listening to me or acting like whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, bring me a lady doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. See, I just felt like they were just, what's the word? Better suited for actually being empathetic in a situation like that was probably the direction I went, because I even asked them, because originally I was like, okay, what are their qualifications? If you're just giving me, can you give me anything? And I remember I accidentally made it was my insurance company who's trying to get my primary situated, and I actually made them cry just by being generally empathetic towards the fact that they couldn't give me any information. They're like, well, she speaks Mandarin. Does that help you? And I was like, no, but I appreciate that you looked that up. Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. Nice. And she's like, we spent like 20 minutes on the phone trying to when it just boiled down to, do you want a guy or girl? That was eventually what
I've recently added this, which I have to explain to people to make them not feel uncomfortable when I'm asking them. I ask, like, I've got a new primary care doctor. And then, like, when I was asking, though, I was like, okay, now is this somebody who works with people of color? Has she treated brown people before? And they just looked at me like, and I don't know if you heard me say this before,
Silas,
when I was talking about my back saga, but like, you know, you guys on the podcast who've heard me talking about this throughout the year, but when my back went out at the end of last year and I had to go to the emergency room and I was like in complete agony, they treated me like I was just trying to score some drugs. I had to literally ask the doctor or the doctor in the air. I had to ask him like, hey, can I get a note for work? And he was like, sure. And gave me a 2-day note for work. Two freaking days. They took so long to treat me. And that like, eventually I just like fell onto the hospital bed and like screamed. Cause like of like the pressure and just like, I didn't know what was going on. It was terrifying.
Holy crap.
But you know, and I've never felt that way. I think I've been fortunate in never feeling that way at a doctor's office before. But in that moment, it just was very like all these stories that I've heard and all these experiences of like,
yeah,
you know, I heard from people being mistreated by doctors and racism, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, oh my goodness.
It's me.
Is that? And then it made me terrified of going back to the doctors of just being like, are they going to treat me? And I feel like I had to have my guard up more and just like, I have a few doctors that I absolutely love, but that experience completely changed me. Like changed my outlook to being like, oh, okay, now I'm aware that you might look at me and think drugs.
Drugs.
Just like, definitely, you know, drug dealer. It just,
man, that sucks. Yeah.
ridiculous.
It sucks so bad because I hurt my back earlier this year. I was in a car accident. I had the exact opposite experience. Go fucking figure.
Oh, sir. Yes, white man.
May we give you a massage? Oh, would you like to lay down instead of being sitting upright for an hour in the waiting room? Perhaps that would help your back. No.
It's worse than that. And I'm so sorry to do this. But
listen, just because I had to suffer doesn't mean I wanted you to.
Oh, I walked into the ER and I said that I was in a car accident and there were people in the waiting room. I was seen first immediately. Oh, there was no question about they walked me right into the back. They barely did vitals. They had me on an X-ray taking pictures of my back because I said I was in a car accident. And they were like, do you want
a different protocol for a car accident? Though I'm wondering because of
it could be because I even said I was like the car accident happened. Like I went about, I got hit with this industrial sized tow truck in the right side of my little Chevy Sonic. And then I had to, that was the week that I was at the Comedy Underground and my cook had quit. And I was going to have to be in the kitchen that weekend. And I got to be honest, as soon as I got hit by that car, like it wasn't my first thought, but like my third thought was, I don't have to work in that fucking kitchen. This week. I was so happy to have that. There was an amount of joy, even though I was pretty banged up. But the next 6 hours I spent getting the place in order so I didn't have to be there. And then I walked right into the ER because I could feel my back. Like the shock was beginning to wear off. It was a pretty bad accident. But they didn't ask for pictures. They didn't ask for proof. They didn't ask for anything other than I just walked up and I was like, I was hit by a tow truck earlier today. And they're like, you mean like a couple hours? No, I was like 6 hours ago. I'm starting to feel it. Was how I put it, which is I'm starting to feel it.
Oh, okay. So maybe ignore my first benefit of the doubt.
No, that's the thing is I was very, and even when they offered me drugs, there was a part of me that's like, okay, but I don't want to do opiates because potential for addiction and stuff like that. They were like,
right.
No, don't worry about it. These things only really work for like 2-3 days and then they don't work at all for the most part. And they were right. They were completely right. And the next 3 days after that, it's taken a lot of rehab to get my back back in shape, but it doesn't sound anything like the back pain that you experienced.
I mean, listen, I actually know I was not dramatizing it for effect. I was trying to be quiet because I didn't want to be loud and make a scene. But then at some point you just can't help yourself and you just scream loudly and flop on over to the bed in the
Gretchen
ER.
Gretchen did that too. You did again, the twins thing between you two. She goes in and is like, she tries to be peppy and a little thing. And I was like, you're in fucking pain. You need to not, they're not going to, I coach her before we go in. So I was like, you can't try to be optimistic in there and try to buckle it up for them. You got to show them how you feel. Like I'm not saying act more, but you got to tell them how you feel. You can't like be trying to suck it up for the doctor so they don't think you're a wimp. Like you have to say, no, I'm in a lot of pain because she'll get on the phone and she'll be like, hey, I'm feeling really sick today. So, I'm going to take the day. Is it okay if I take the day off? And I was like, no, you got to be hoarse voice. You got to just sound as nasty as you feel. One thing I wanted to, before we get away, when you're talking about.
I'm not crying, but my eye just burning.
The female doctor versus the male. I like to think of myself as progressive, not having issues, not homophobic at all. Mm-hmm. But then when I call to get a massage and they're like, do you want a guy or a girl? I'm like, oh, no. Girl, what are you talking about? I don't know why. And I was like, it's horrible. I think it's absolutely horrible. I should be completely relaxed. But I just want to get rubbed down by lady hands.
I don't find that to be very horrible. For
really?
Like something
I think it's
like
totally...
For something like a massage or like if I'm going to the gynecologist, okay, TM, it's not TMI, I'm a woman, go figure. These things happen. But it's like, I'm going to have a preference based off of what makes me feel more comfortable. And it's not something with how I would treat people when I'm actually fully clothed and just talking to them in a regular interaction. But if somebody's going to have their hands on me, I want my muscles to relax and feel comfortable or at least feel less embarrassed. So,
but I'm like, well, why am I not as comfortable? Why am I not like, oh, it doesn't matter. whatever. I don't know. That's therapy, but I have other issues to work on before I even care about getting into that.
I'm going to say that that's down on my list too.
It's an issue, but I'm not working on it.
I had a massage therapist that was a woman. And I was worked on by a man too. And I actually didn't notice too big a difference, but the only if I had to choose one or the other, it would have been the woman, but that was because I liked her more. Like, we got along better, and the guy was sort of a sub in for her. And I was like, cool. We had substitute no teacher chemistry as far as talking. Like, she was funny and fun. Like for me, maybe I'm more of a, the version of sexuality where it's personality based. Maybe I'm that way, but with massage therapists for me.
Yeah.
I just want a nice conversation.
Oh yeah, I do. I go to see one person who I'm absolutely like, her massage, she's an incredible experience now, like mental and physical, you know, tied in. And she wasn't available one weekend, and I'm trying to get all mine in for the year, right? And so I went to see someone else, and they were, my wife had gone the same weekend to see this other person. She warned me before I went. She's like, she's no Cassidy. So, you know, it felt very like physical therapy, like not more than a massage. And I went in and I was like, yes, it seemed very efficient. It was a very efficient massage.
Right.
I was relaxed. She relaxed the muscles that needed to be worked with. And she talked to me, was very efficient. Where my regular, when I go in and I feel like mentally cared for, I feel, you know, just like she's just the way she talks to you and deals with it. I'm just like, oh, she's just, it's a wonderful experience. But then there's the efficient one, like, and they both.
There's such a difference in personalities and stuff. And
huge.
Yeah.
Before we get to your story, Robert, there's one thing I want to bring. How do you feel about when friends of yours online that you both like that don't know each other start fighting? Is there anything more uncomfortable, like, where you're like,
there isn't. I wish, like, I'm doing this hand signal to stop by pressing again. Like, as soon as you said that, I'm like, no, press it out immediately. Because I've had friends who won't visit me at work because other comics have gotten into it with them. Like, they won't come to the Comedy Underground because comics have gotten into it with them, and they're like, well, I'm not coming to a place that would have that guy. I'm like, I'm not, sorry, guys. All right. You guys would actually have gotten along.
Yeah. Oh, that's what kills me. I had two people today fighting that I'm like, you two would be friends. You don't even, you're totally missing. Both of y'all, you all have taken something wrong here.
Yep.
And
you put words on a page and put a face to it, kind of like the amount of context to what they've posted doesn't take into account an actual person.
Yeah.
And that's what's difficult, is your friends are seeing, quotes.
Yeah.
And they are literal quotes, and really how you interpret them can be based on what your mood really is.
Right.
I do my best not to do any comments fighting on Facebook, though every once in a while I will look at the NFL.com comment section. And I do. I know that there will be a rage inside me that can't be quelled until I tell just some guy who's like, hey, they're just athletes. They're only paid to catch a ball. And I'm like, and you're just an accountant who's only paid to do accounting things. So maybe shut up about Russell Wilson. I don't know. I know I'm in a bad mood when I even press the link.
I want to fight.
That is my fight. That is my dying. I'm the guy on the hill that defends Russell Wilson to the end, except for maybe the last three games. He's been making bad decisions, but he'll get on track.
You make bad decisions sometimes.
And I know exactly what you guys are talking about, the friend comments and sports.
Yeah.
Do you not have friend comments?
I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I mean, every now and again, I'll see some stuff.
You must have friends that don't get along with each other.
I mean, probably. I mean,
you don't know?
They don't really. Well, I mean, I don't really see these comments that they're getting into these wars. And if I do, I think generally I probably just scroll past it and I'm like, not getting involved. If it, you know, so I don't have to.
A fight happened earlier today. I just was making a joke about I was a little happy because the PlayStation 5, I've been trying to get it. I don't even have a good reason to get it, by the way. I don't even have a good reason to get it, but I'm trying. I just want it. I want it. FOMO. That's why. Yeah. And I said, I was a little happy because it's being scalped. You know, it's been getting scalped for not scalped, by the way. Oh, I'm trying to eliminate that word. It's been getting resold for $1,000, right? It's a $500, $550 with tax, about $1,000. Prices are dropping. They're selling them. I saw them for $800 because too many people bought them that are just trying to resell them.
And
It's bringing it down because people are like, I don't care. I don't care enough to do it. So, I made a comment, a thing about this, and then one of my friends apparently did buy and sold one real quick. I thought she was joking, but she did do it to get the little money. By the way, and then another friend got really mad at her for that.
Yep.
Now, what's also the one who bought and resold, what she doesn't know is that what she did with that money, which was donated it to a cause, that's what she did with it. That's what it was, their extra money. My whole thing with the PlayStation though is why I don't feel bad about people reselling. Like I've resold before, never that much. But you know, a fee for I got it for me being smart enough. Look, it's a luxury item. For what? This is not. The argument that, people can't even afford groceries for me isn't valid because I'm like, if you can't afford groceries, your ass better not be buying a PlayStation 5 anyway, a retail, even if it makes you feel good. That's not good. I always like that it is a luxury tax for rich people, but let them pay a little more, even though it doesn't mean anything to them. And also, by the way, the PlayStation 5 has no exclusive games to PlayStation 5.
Really?
Every game coming out has a PlayStation 4 version.
Wow.
So there's no reason to actually buy this except that it's better and it's new.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, I don't even need it. Why do I want it? Because it's going to be better. And I'm like, I don't want to buy the Spider-Man with the less good version. I need the better one, which will be played on my TV that's not even as good as it could be. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And to have people fight about this on my page and then not like each other because of a PlayStation 5 that neither of them really have, or nobody really has the bone, skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Neither's PlayStation. Neither one of their names is Sony.
That's true.
And I'm like, you guys are fighting. You're liberals. You're both liberals. You both hate Trump equally as well. You made several different little philosophy and we've all done stuff that the other person would disagree with behaviors.
Yeah, of course.
So you may not agree with reselling. I may not agree with other things you've done. Right. But what I don't care. And
look, could we ever agree with everything our friends have done ever?
No.
That's the thing is I don't put a there's no stamp of approval for everything that you, Silas, I don't know all the things you've ever done, but would I disagree with some of them? I'm sure I would.
You would.
But also, please don't give me that list.
Here's a list. Robert, I'm going to text you all the things that you would really hate that I've done.
Please do. And please make sure that you rank it worst to just give me the top 10. Give me the bullet points on it. That's the thing is if they were in real life, it really wouldn't even be a problem. But it wouldn't be a problem. But also, literally all they're seeing is just such a small snippet. Like the comment that got blown up, because I remember seeing it, was only 2 or 3 sentences that they'd done it. And it's easy to wash over that kind of stuff and just be like, okay, cool. They've got somebody who did that. I have friends who I've unfollowed and blocked and stuff like that for way worse than selling a PlayStation 5. So much worse.
I am wondering now, are these fights about little things happening because we don't have a good comedian fight reason now? Like there's nobody, there's no rape joke person to yell at. Everybody's banned, right? Like everybody's banned from everywhere now. Like
2020, the year everyone was banned.
So comedians are like, I gotta fight about something. Like, what can I get mad about? You. Yep. You're making me mad.
I don't know. I mean, listen, I obviously like I don't have a play. I was not ever considering getting a PlayStation 5 because I don't play that many video games. So I don't really have any skin in the game or whatever. But and I don't know who you're talking about. But just off of hearing this, I think that if they were in person, they still would have a disagreement. It's just the other, they could talk back and forth.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like one person is like, okay, I'm going to buy this and I'm going to sell it for double. And the other person is like, that's messed up. And so I think those two viewpoints both have valid points though. Like I could definitely see both sides to it. Because I don't necessarily think it would matter that she donated it to the person who was like, but you bought it, you're selling it for double now. That's messing it up for other people, you know?
Yeah. Here's my, you know, I discovered a problem with Comic-Con. Like I was selling tickets to Comic-Con, like first to get, just to get my money back. Like, because I had already bought my tickets and then somebody, then I got tickets for being a speaker because I was going to be there. So I didn't need mine. And then the first year that I was just trying to get my money back from them, I sold them to a guy and he told me he was going to go sell it, like resell it more. And I'm like, well, I could have done that.
It's a free market. And, I mean, that's
right. So then I was like, well, then the next one, I was like, no, well, I'm going to make the money. So now I try to price it cheap. When I do this, I price it lower than the scalpers.
Oh, except for you're not using that word.
I know. Yeah. Well, tickets I call it a scalping. I don't think
extortionists.
I try to get it like a little cheap, and then I try to see if the person's really going to Comic-Con, like if they just wanted to.
Mm.
And every year I tell myself when I see them, I'm just gonna like give it to them the normal price, but then I chicken out and I just take the money because I feel awkward about what I was doing. But I take the money and I spend it all on the artists and I buy art that I wouldn't have.
Yep.
Because otherwise someone else is just going to sell it and feed their family. So
I know. How dare they feed their family? You have other beautiful pieces of art now. They're going to have food.
Because I'll do a little bit higher. But and to make up for that, though, in the past, now that I'm better off in life, I've given tickets away. I've given them away, or I do sell them at cost to somebody I know.
That's cool.
And like this last year, I didn't even order. I was pretty confident I was going to get in, so I didn't even order them extra. I just ordered just for myself, maybe. Like before, I was like, well, what if Gretchen decides to go? Like I had reasons, but now I was like, no, I'm going to get in. So I'm not going to try to do extra and sell it. It's not scalping. It's reselling. That's. Guy, not hate on anybody.
I was only calling you on it.
I know. You should absolutely. Even as I said it, I was like,
the tickets feels like is like the right way to put it.
I feel like tickets are scalping. That's for sure. Like
tickets are scalping. Tickets are scalping.
Yeah,
everything else you sell, but tickets are scalping.
Yeah, like I don't think. And also, like, okay, I bought a Sony PlayStation Classic. The mini when they came out, I bought it for $99 because I thought I was like, oh, these are going to go just like the Nintendo one did. Not only did they not go, they dropped the price to $70 because.
Yep.
So when you do this, you do take a chance that it doesn't work out.
Like a stock.
Yeah. It's
like an actual itemized stock that you hold in your hand.
Yeah. I have it. I'm trying to sell one now for $60 and I can't even unload it. So I'm like, well, this is rough.
I mean, what kind of games are on it?
Robert.
Yes.
I have known you. I'm trying to think. Was it
7 years?
Seven? When did you start comedy?
I started in September 2012.
And
in Seattle.
And did you, were you, because I feel like, because 2012, what is it? So that'd be 8 years. Were you like only going to a couple places at the time when you started? Or was
I was going pretty much everywhere I could.
Were you?
When I first started out, I mean, even I was so freaking shy to begin with that most of the time I had a stack of notebook paper that was this thick full of jokes, or what I thought were jokes at the time. And some of them were, some of them ended up being good. But I would show up with a stack this thick and I would feverish all the time before every single thing. I would look through every single one and I'd be like, none of this is good. What am I going to say? And I'd go on, I would do a bit about Cosmopolitan magazine. But the only place I would go to, I would actually scout out each every place for like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I would go to each open mic and I would sit there for 3 weeks watching everyone do open mic stuff.
Wow.
And no one talked to me the whole entire time. And I wanted them to so badly. I would bring that stack of notebook paper. I would also bring Tina Fey's bossy pants just as like some
conversation starter.
Please someone talk to me. I like funny. And I like her. And that I read that book 3 times. Waiting for someone to talk to me about that book.
Reading a book, no one's going to disturb you.
I didn't take social cues great when I started. It was sort of the signal of you could if you wanted to. Here's an invitation. It's kind of just a
I was at that point when you started. I was still going. I could only go every other week out.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had to be at home for a week and then I could go out on the off week. So that's probably why it probably took me a while to see the pity or to catch.
Oh, for sure.
But like,
catch when you found me. So there's,
I think when people start out in my observation, what I think is happening is we see so many people drop out.
Yeah,
I feel like we don't want to get emotionally invested in someone who's just going to
stop. I do it every year. Oh, yeah. I every single year at the Comedy Underground, very specifically, before I started running the club, I would avoid it like the plague on all the way through January. It was the New Year's resolution comics. Yeah. Like, this is the year I'm going to be the biggest comic. This is the gym. Literally, I'm not going to see you in a month. I don't care. I'm not even going to learn your name. Honestly, because here's what's happened to me over and over again is I learn your name. I tag up one of your jokes. You go out, you get a great big laugh. You realize, oh, I got what I needed. And you leave me to be here alone again. I can't do that again.
It's like, you must be like getting broken up with a lot.
It felt that, especially when you like, for the most part, being a new comic in Seattle, like it does feel like you get started out with groups of people who you all kind of go your own different directions. For the most part, and you come back and you're like, hey, how are you guys doing? And then you go off again and come back and you know who you started out with.
Yeah.
But are you like a real clique of friends? I don't know that you are. So the whole entire time you are kind of trying to find this friendship group to really be friends with in the comedy scene. And I think I've got a good group of friends now.
Yeah.
But for the longest period of time, it felt like anyone who was new, all I wanted was to be their friend. And then they would leave me over and over again until eventually I got good enough to where other comedians were like, hey, you don't suck. And I'm like, I don't, thanks. and that was a good opener for us.
Yeah. Well, I imagine being at the club though, managing Underground, which you are still, right? Yep. Technically, yep. Even though it's not going.
Oh, I'm going in Thursday to deal with some stuff down there.
Good.
So I'm doing little errands to make sure the place is still standing when I get back.
So, like you, so you have people that are still coming to feature and headline that you started with, right? Whereas
sometimes I'm the one who recommends them to be moving up and stuff like that. And it's been really cool to be a part of that. It's weird to say, but when I first started out, the cool people on the block for me, especially at 23 years old, were Monica Nevy and Mike Coletta and that gang.
Yeah.
And yeah, like it was maybe like a year and a half ago when they invited me out to go to Denny's at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting in Denny's and I'm like, I'm part of the cool kids again. Like there was this sort of sense of just, oh, I'm finally one of you.
Yeah.
I've finally actually been accepted into the people that I idolized for a long period of time. And now their successes I take and I'm just like, yeah, it's awesome to watch them grow. And just like, that's probably the thing that I miss most about running the underground was just having the daily check-ins of how are you doing? Even just getting, I'm fine on a daily basis was, I didn't realize how much I valued it until it was gone.
I feel like a lot of the people I looked up to when I started, they all left. Everyone just went to LA or New York.
Yep.
And I'm like, y'all left me. And then the people that I was sort of peers with, we all are doing our own shows. Like, I'm in Medford this weekend and I'm going to be in the underground. And then we're switching. So I would not see them. I couldn't see them. And then I didn't know any new people. And I was like, how do these road comics deal with this? Like, you don't have any friends. Like, what's
going on?
They've
got to be completely alone. I mean, you can only have three, four comics on
the number of pillows and weighted blankets they have, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, boy. I packed up my weighted blanket recently and realized just how big a bag I would need. And I actually said out loud, this is going to suck for traveling on flights because I'm definitely getting hit with the bulky bag from here on out because I need this.
I mean, people get emotional support pets. We should have emotional support blankets.
Hey, Linus had one.
No. Yeah, right, exactly. Yay, Charlie Brown Christmas, you guys. Who's excited to see it again?
Yeah, I got Apple Plus. Robert, were you always a funny guy, like growing up?
Funny? I was okay. I remember getting my first like good laugh. I was a freshman in high school and I was doing a one act play and it went really, really well. But I was also, as much as I would say that I think I wanted to be funny more than I was funny. But not in a way that was class clownish or anything, or somebody was forcing jokes. It was more that I kind of wanted to study what made people laugh on a regular basis. Like it feels more of a student of the game sort of situation rather than somebody who's constantly in it, even though I'm being a comedian, which it's a very strange situation. Because I do always feel like I'm sort of trying to chase funny, even though I work on voices, tonality, pacing, like it all that feels more athletic than it does that raw sort of like funny from time to time. And it's a very strange feeling. It's mine.
Yeah. What made you decide to try stand up?
Actually, I wanted to do it after I got out of high school, but I knew that my writing was garbage. Like the first year and a half it took me to write, and I tried my jokes out on my friends frequently and they didn't laugh at all. And they loved me like a lot. And they knew that was the reason. They absolutely knew that was the reason. But then I wrote one joke that I looked at it on paper and I was like, that's a really good joke. Like I 100% know that this will get laughs per pause, per moment, that kind of thing. And it intersected with this guy in my philosophy course. He stood up in the middle of the class and he was like, I'm with a band. And we don't have an opener right now. And we would really like an opener. And I raised my hand and was like, I'll do it. I'm a comedian, which was a bold-faced fucking lie. It was such a lie. But I opened for a band for 10 minutes the first time I did comedy. And it went really well, actually. Like, the shtick that... Here's the thing is, it was a funny shtick that I was working with, because I had these little keynote cards that I kept in my pocket that had my jokes on them. They were one-liner jokes, and they were pretty bad. They weren't great. But the fact that I continually looked down at the cards over and over again after every single joke made them bust up laughing, because they thought I was doing it ironically as a character. And I wasn't. I wasn't doing a character. These were, like, the one joke that I knew would work did work really well. And that sort of joke made me go, oh, yeah, I'll figure this out. And it took a certain amount of writing till I was really done. And I was happy with going on stage and being, and I knew it pretty instantly once I got that first big laugh. I was like, oh, no, this is exactly what I want to do. But... Yeah.
Did you've had people comment about Seinfeld?
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah. How do you feel about that? Like,
it's always, what's the word? I think that it's a level of just being polished talking that people pick up on. Like, the worst part is I can do Seinfeld and the whole, oh, I can do Jerry Seinfeld. We all know I can do a Jerry Seinfeld. It's very over the plate. We all know
yeah.
it. Like back in college when I was first starting stand-up comedy, what people don't know is I played Jerry Seinfeld in an intro to acting course, or an intro to sitcom writing and doing.
Okay.
And I was this theater minor. I came in and they had these BFAs, people who wanted to be actors long-term, and I just wanted to be funny. I was already doing stand-up a little bit, and I came in and they were casting for Jerry Seinfeld. And once they said, who's going to play Seinfeld, everyone just pointed directly at me. everyone pointed directly at me. And the thing was I'd never seen Seinfeld before. That's something that, like, at 22, 23 years old, I'd never seen Seinfeld, even though I grew up in the 90s. I watched Third Rock from the Sun and the Drew Carey Show, and that's all I was with. Oh, and Whose Line Is It Anyway? Those were my big three before I went to bed, and I only got to see those on Wednesday nights if my homework was done, typically. So I didn't see Seinfeld.
Wait, so did you watch a bunch of stand-up? Or
oh, so much.
Oh, okay.
My senior year, I did my senior thesis on the philosophy of laughter, where I studied like probably 1,000 hours of stand-up comedy, just because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to know what I was getting into going in, because stand-up was the whole thing. It's always kind of been the beginning, middle, and end for me, ever since I got that laugh.
That's funny. I never, when I was growing up, I didn't know there, like, I didn't really see that much of a difference between stand-up comedy and a sitcom. For me, it was all comedy, because everyone I liked had a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was just watching these stand-up acts. It was like, oh, that's just, they're like, I didn't frame it in my head like I can now, but I thought of them as one man shows. I was like, comedy's comedy. And so I didn't really differentiate, because all my, you know, I love Paul. I was young and I loved Paul Reiser, you know, like, and Billy Crystal. I loved them and I loved their movies. So I was like, oh, yeah, I did comedy. It's just a different, I felt it was a different way of presenting. And so until I went to stand up to an actual show live, years before I ever wanted, before I did it myself. Yeah. I think that was the first time that it occurred to me that it might be different in some way.
Oh, that's so interesting, because the second I heard Robin Williams live at the Met when I was like 12 years, or I was probably 11, and just hearing him doing those things, I knew was different. And then I saw Patton Oswalt at Bumbershoot when I was like 12 years old. And those two things were like the biggest things for me. Also, My mom shouldn't. My mom was a relatively prudish. I didn't get to watch PG-13 movies until I was actually 13 years old. So when we saw Patton Oswalt do lollipops and lollipops and werewolves, it was only because they had air conditioning and the line was short to get in. And that was honestly, if it had been 3 degrees less, I don't know that I would be in stand-up comedy right now on a hot summer day.
That's hilarious. What was I? I lost it. I was thinking about.
While Silas is thinking of that, I didn't watch much. I didn't get to watch much stand up growing up. Was it mostly on cable or something?
Comedy Central.
Yeah. Okay.
Comedy Central was the big thing.
I didn't have it. So I didn't.
I'm old enough that didn't exist. That didn't exist when I was growing up.
Oh, I don't know. But yeah, like, I mean, all of these actors and stuff that I loved, and I found out later they did stand up. I watched a lot of SNL, lots of like sitcoms and stuff. But yeah, I didn't get to watch much stand up until
give
later.
Me records to, when I was 10, I was listening to Richard Pryor albums.
Oh.
And he would make tapes for me, like besides Richard Pryor, Bill Cosby, Smothers Brothers. Like, so. Like, and then I would listen to sketches of like Red Fox and Abbott and Costello. Like, I was inundated with comedy and I all the time. So I just didn't think of it as its own separate thing. Yeah. Cause I'd listen to the Billy or listen to Richard Pryor, and then I'd go watch a movie and be like, oh, well, that's a lot different. Like, he doesn't swear on these movies like he does in those. I'm allowed to watch the, I'm not going to get in
That's
trouble.
That's the secret.
I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I just
add the swear words.
I don't even starting comedy. I was Rick Kunkler gave me the advice he gave me when I started. I forget if I featured for him. It was near there. He told me to stop memorizing. He told me to stop practicing.
Yep.
Because I was telling him, like, because anything would happen and I get thrown off because I was doing it like a monologue.
Yeah.
And Kunkler started off in theater too. And he was telling me, like, yeah, you have to stop. And it's what I had to do. I had to stop practicing.
Yep.
And go up. It was the only way to get it. And I still can't even do. I wrote, my writing was, sometimes I'm like, my writing was better when I started. I wrote great. I wrote really well. But I can't do any of those bits now because they sound like a monologue.
Because they're completely flat all the way through?
No, I'm an actor. Like, I had it. Okay. It's just, it doesn't feel right anymore because it doesn't flow the way my stuff flows now. But I wrote solid. Like, if you read it, it's funny. And in a play, it would be funny. But just not.
I've been going back to writing lately because Michael Malone was the one who told me, like 6 months in, I was hosting at the Underground for the first time. And Michael Malone just won the Seattle National Comedy Competition. It was Sunday night. There were 11 people in the crowd. And backstage, the manager at the time, Chris Brannon, he was like, hey, Mike, how did you get good? And he said that he was out on the road featuring. And he'd done kind of a crappy bar show the entire weekend. And it was the last night. And the bar manager came up to him and said, all right, I've heard all of your material. If I hear a single joke you've said this entire weekend, I'm going to heckle you myself and I'll ruin this show. And Michael was terrified of having a bad show. And so he went out and he improvised the whole 25 minutes. And he says, it's the scariest thing. Like, it's the scariest thing I ever did. But once I got through that fear membrane of knowing that that's what would come out if I didn't have anything as crutches, it made me a lot better and it made things a lot smoother. And as soon as he said that, Chris Brannon was like, all right, Robert, we know you've only got this 10 minutes. We've heard all the jokes before. You just have to live on stage for 10 minutes. There's 11 people here. No one even cares. And then they didn't light me and I did 22 minutes on stage before they, thank God, it was not good. Yeah. It was not a good situation. conversation. It was a struggle and a half, but that was the moment that I went back to doing the monologue stuff for a little while afterwards. But I also recognized that the second I started being like, quit going out there with written down stuff and just find a premise and riff on it and then edit from there up here. Mm. That's when I started getting good.
I do write still.
Good.
But I don't say it out loud the first time until I'm on stage. Yep. And for some reason that kicks it out of, that's what changes it for me. So it's not monologue sounding and it sounds like the conversation.
Definitely.
So I'll go back and then I'll rewrite it. Then I'll be rewriting it. And then even then I can start saying it a little bit, but I don't practice like my 3-minute monologue. I don't say scene at the end. or as I always wanted to say at the end of a monologue, you know.
I like to say, I think it's funny if you do like a very long, like some stuff you have to write it out and really have it like punch, 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 punch. And even not letting the audience breathe on it kind of lets them know how much you've got it rehearsed and shows a certain level of, like, I want to see some level of professionalism, and I don't want to feel like you're winging it the whole. I want to know that there was craftsmanship.
Yeah. No. It's just, that's my, I would say it's my way of developing the material.
Yeah.
But not, definitely. It's not the way the final product's going to be.
Oh, for sure. It takes a long time for the final product. I mean, there are jokes that have evolved for 6 years for me. That sometimes I'm like, oh, that's how that joke, like even when I did my album, one of the jokes that made it and is now on Sirius XM right now, wasn't funny until that week. And I realized that it wasn't funny and it fit perfectly in the middle of the set that I did.
Oh, nice.
It took it exactly until that exact moment for me to be like, oh, that's how this joke goes. That's the premise and the setup and the different things that actually needed. But I had it written out 4 years before then, 4 or 5 years, and it didn't work once. It didn't work one goddamn time. And I am still bitter about it because it's a good joke.
I have a couple of those that I'm like, one day I'm going to figure out what's wrong with this because I think it's funny.
Yep.
It's funny to me. How will I make this funny to other people? Unless it's just funny to me. Maybe that's just what it is.
It could be. I mean, what about you, Samantha? Do you have any of those hanging in the back workshop jokes that just you tinker with it over and over again and it never succeeds? It never succeeds the way you believe it should have.
Ooh, I don't think I've been as let's see. I might try it like 3 times, right? Mm-hmm. And if I can't get it the third time, I probably, you know, let it take a rest and move on to writing something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah. But there's a couple that I was still working out. Like there was one I still want to do, but
yeah,
that comes to mind, but yeah, it's not.
I can see in your smile that there's one directly on your head that, and the smile makes me know that you're also a little bit frustrated because you believe it. You totally believe it's a funny joke.
Like it will work so well, but it has to be done well. Mm-hmm. And, it is about hair. So you got I did it once. You know what? The time it worked the best, I think, was the first time I did it when I was riffing at an open mic. And when I tried to do it, like, I was like, okay, let me try to, you know, listen to playback and get this down again. It just wasn't quite right. So
I'm having PTSD right now. Thinking about all these jokes that didn't work.
I miss bombing almost as much as I miss succeeding.
Talking bombing, not even bomb. You know what's worse than bombing? It's when 3 people laugh. Like they get it. They get it, what you're saying.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, why didn't the rest of you? What? That wasn't.
That's worse for you? I'd
rather it not. I'd rather nobody laugh. I would rather dead silence than 3 people because 3 people tells me, well, there's something to it.
Yeah. Yep.
And when you consistently get a few people to laugh, you're like, what's wrong with it? Why don't the rest of you get it? Like, so well, I don't know what to fit. If it gets no laughter, then I know, well, that was just shit. That was complete shit.
Yeah.
So I know it's on the, and I'm like, just when I can't solve it, you know, and you're like Doc Brown trying to figure out what's the formula.
Yeah.
I think I just leave jokes a little. I don't know. Maybe I have a percentage of less jokes that I try to save than you do based off of this. Unless if it's, I don't know.
I save most of them. I'd say I save probably 95% of, if it's really, if it clicks in the madness portion of my brain that knows that it can get to the funny factor, I will not let it go until it has found its actual puzzle piece. That said, I have begun weeding through there's still a ranking systems, and there's definitely a bottom to that ranking system of what to do first. It's still cataloged in there, and I still have to look at the list of in development and go, okay, what did old Robert think that was?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so like Silas, what you were saying too, like if nobody laughs and then three people laugh. So for me, when I'm like, I'll try it three times, maybe if it's something, you know, I really care about, I'll try it three times. And that's like, if nobody laughs all three times, then I'm like, yeah, probably ought to move on to the next joke. Cause I will have you know, tried the premise or this or that. But if it's a joke I really believe in, and I get like three laughs or one laugh, then I'm like, okay, I need to like just keep working on it. Mm-hmm. So I don't like give up all the time. It's just,
you know, like even if a joke gets a laugh, honestly, my favorite reason to perform at the Underground is that is to me the only true place that I, that matters to me if people laugh or not, because it's the only place that has this random intersection of people going to see comedy.
Yeah.
Of all different ages, and what it's the biggest, I think it's the best focus group for a joke. So if I don't get a laugh at Jai Tai, I'm talking open mics now. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
If I, you know, at any bar, I don't really care if I don't get a laugh. If I don't get any laugh at the Underground on a joke, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
Nothing? None of y'all? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's definitely needs some work.
Especially on the open mic, which it's so strange that I love the open mic so much at the Underground compared to, like, I'd even take the open mic, doing 10 minutes on that open mic versus 10 minutes opening day, night, Friday, or maybe even sometimes Saturday night. I might take the open mic right now, just I feel like there's a different subsection of people that come on that Monday that I vibe with a little bit more. Maybe than even if I still do well on the Fridays and Saturdays. And
I wonder what's wrong with those people. Like who on purpose goes to an open mic?
God bless them. I don't know.
I still never go watch one.
I would on right purpose. Now. Really? Are you kidding? Ugh. Like, I cannot. That is like one of the things that, like, yeah, I miss performing and, you know, socializing and just all the stuff. But like, one of the things I cannot wait to do when it's safe to do it again is be an audience member. Go to a jazz club, go see a comedy show,
I would see any, like, anything that's not an open mic.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
I'm just saying, I'm so missing. So I'm so missing it right now that I would even go to an open mic.
I'd go to an open mic.
I'd go to an open mic and watch. I am sober. I had to do that the whole time. I actually, especially open mics, when we all get back into things, are going to be fucking nuts.
Oh,
it's going to be crazy. Every single comedian is going to be doing their version of what they think they are now. And that is going to be something at a bare minimum. And I am so excited for open mics to happen so that I get to know what you have been thinking is going to be the new you for the last year and a half. I am so excited for that.
I want to know what the audience is going to care about.
I'm going to tell them what to care about. No, I'm just kidding.
It'll be the same.
Are we going to forget?
It's not going to forget, but that wasn't... Comedy is escapism. Like, are there going to be bits about coronavirus and stuff? Absolutely, there are going to be those. But is it going to be a different set of people with different values and stuff that they've changed immensely? No, it's going to be the same group of people that are going to laugh at
We could probably write out the top 10 premises now of what's going to be said.
I got to be honest. One of the greatest pleasures I've had during this whole entire thing was like 3 months after everything shut down. The day before Inslee was like, no outdoor performances, no nothing. I got to perform up in Whidbey Island for the Whidbey Island Theater. And I opened for Rick Kunkler, all people. And Rick beforehand, it had been 3 months off. And he looked at me and was like, hey, Robert, so do you remember how to do comedy? And I'm like, no, of course not. No, it's been 3 months. None of us have any clue what we're doing.
Yeah.
He was like, okay, perfect. I need you to do 40 minutes so that we make sure we make our time. And he was like, can you do that? And I was like, sure, why not? I'm not going to see anyone for what feels like forever now.
Yeah.
But one thing that was super nice was going out there and I did new jokes. One of them was a coronavirus joke that one did so well that I'm still like, that joke kept me going and knowing, oh yeah, I'm on the right track with this joke. And I'm on track with a couple of other things.
Yeah.
So I've had this nice little peek into the darkness. I've seen the light on the other side and I was like, okay, I kind of see that one working.
Yeah.
But also one other aspect, most of the jokes came out and I couldn't remember my own jokes completely. They weren't polished anymore. Like the tones, the beats and everything. Yeah. I was saying versions of the jokes. And they were coming out and they were funny, but they were not the same way as when they went in at all.
Yeah, I might have to go do the practice thing again. I might have to practice a little bit.
It's not a bad idea.
Do my set. Hey, we're running our time here. Before we go though, we have 7 questions.
Okay.
We ask everybody the first time they come on. It's the Black and a Half world famous 7 questions.
Oh,
that's the graphic that comes in.
Silly.
Someday. Okay. Okay. First one. What are you most nerdy about?
Football or baseball. And it's unfortunate that I have to say that because I'm losing my fantasy football league right now. And I am very unhappy about it. I won my fantasy football league 3 years in a row, then took second, then took third out of 12 people over and over again. I felt like it. And then in the last 2 years, I feel like I completely lost the pulse of the NFL, which frustrates me on a level I can't understand because I sometimes feel like I'm even ahead of like analysts and stuff like that with comments and observations. And I feel like I'm invested in it. And then all of a sudden, but it's not translating to me schooling to see Lucy Tolleson. So,
right. I mean, there's some luck involved on matchups, you know,
there is.
And what are you going to do if they got the vid and they're out? Right.
Yeah.
Suddenly. Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Oysters, raw oysters is my favorite food in the entire world. I can actually tell a notable difference in my entire esteem, like for 3 days after I've eaten a raw oyster. I'm starting to actually have one per day just to keep myself up and going. So yeah.
Wow.
Do you have a favorite type of oyster?
It's called a fat bastard. It is a Shigoku style of oyster, but it's much larger and it is really, really good.
Samantha, are you an oyster connoisseur too?
You know, no, I worked at I worked at several nice restaurants, but the first one that had oysters, I refused to taste, even though it was like this crazy expensive, like it that would have been the place where I should have had my first oyster. But the other place I worked also great oysters too. And eventually I just was like, you know what? I'm going to just like do it so that I can be better at my job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually good. It was good, but I don't like eating raw things. And so mm-hmm. I just can't like do it on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Just cause, but yeah. I was like, ooh.
Oh, I have a whole Excel spreadsheet of how I felt after of different types of oysters and stuff like that. It is easily my favorite food.
Maybe. Oh man, doing a wine and fresh oyster tasting and the sun by the pier.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it makes me want to have an oyster. I know I'm taking the conversation away. Wow. Please.
No. I'll indulge in this all day long.
I'm in shock right now.
I know, right? Me too. The things I will do to be good at my job. Dedication.
That is investigative journalism. That is.
Right?
What's something that you love to drink?
Give me a sec. I should have a great answer. Before I got sober, it probably would have been an Irish Death. But I've been sober for, I think, closing in on 2 years now. Congrats. 2 years in May, so a year and a half. Let's see. What do I enjoy drinking? I've been doing LaCroix lately. Uh-huh. I'm not much of a soda drinker. Ooh, orange cream soda. Actually, you know what? A good orange cream soda or a root beer with a hint of that, like a Thomas Kemper's, anything.
Ooh, Thomas Kemper's.
Will hit me in my soul pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Mm. That or just a good A&W root beer float. I feel like that's kind of cheating because ice cream's involved, but
yeah.
I'm also a big sweets person, but it's like my biggest vice.
You don't drink soda much, but you're a sweets person.
It is a huge difficult.
It's like, when I drink sugar,
I will knock back six. So like it is, I'm either an all or nothing person when it comes to soda. I will either have six sodas, just line them up, all A&Ws, Dr. Peppers, if I'm really.
Yeah.
But I'll knock them back that day. It won't even be an hour and a half before they're all gone. But it's one or the other. Right now I've been good as far as sugar goes, but it's we'll see. Okay. We'll see. It's only been a week and a half.
Okay. What kind of music do you love?
Do I love girly pop music? I love the girliest of all the pop music, Taylor Swift, Britney Spears. One of my favorite things, my dad's the same way. It's actually one of my favorite things about him is that I will catch him with his headphones in and he's like doing that low dad like hum to like ABBA or something like that. Like he's doing that and he sounds like a druid that's like self-conscious about how he's going to like hum along with other druids. It's okay. Awesome. It's one of my favorite things. In the entire world. But yeah, usually just girly pop music, anything that gets me, that makes me feel like any wiggle in my hips is a good thing.
Okay. What do you love to create?
Comedy, jokes, any great bit. I am still chasing what I would consider a great act. I, as long as I'm still here, I want to know that before I go out and I'm dead, that I created one truly great act that people will look back on it. And even if it's just a few people who don't know even a lot about comedy and they go, no, that was something exceptional. That took so much work. That took an amount of creativity, creative mastery, patience, a level of risk, and a level of genuine, improvement, self-improvement, to be able to get to the place where I can even do it. And as long as I do that, I will be very happy. A great act.
Great.
Yeah.
What's a game you love to play?
Final Fantasy VI. It was originally 3 in America. Okay. It is easily my favorite video game of all time. It was on the Super Nintendo, and I usually replay through it at least once every, maybe twice a year or so. I could probably speed run it in like maybe 10 hours if I've got an emulator at this point. But there's a level of storytelling in it with the 2D animations and stuff like that, that had just come long enough away to where they could really express emotions with the orchestras and music involved that I think really hit a new level for gaming in general. Like, as much as people want to say that the 3D animation with Final Fantasy VII would really took us to a new place, I think that six actually laid the groundwork for all of those things. And there's a part of me that every single time I play through it, I get not just this nostalgic factor, but there's a certain part of me that knows that it created the foundation for honestly just sad storytelling in artistic mediums for a long period of time going forward. And it was the first one to take really big risks with that type of, and did it so well. So yeah, okay. Final Fantasy VI.
Okay, and our last question, and you may have answered this already, but in 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
I would like to say it's the great act, like I mentioned earlier, but to be honest, the more that I've gone into the pandemic and stuff like that, the more I've recognized how much I love stand-up comedy. I love all of everything involved, the jokes, the process, all that. I miss stand-up comedy. I was on a silent meditation retreat relatively recently where there was no meat, no sex, no talking, none of that. You weren't allowed to do anything. And the only thing I missed every single day was stand-up comedy. That's it. That's it. That's the only thing that every single day I thought about it. And I haven't missed a single day since. But as far as what I want to be remembered for, overall, being a kind human being, that people came in and were around me and they felt like they had better days because I was around them. That just in general, being a good friend, good son, just being an overall good human being to be around consistently, really, I think would be more. It's nice to be a great comedian that people remember your bits, but there are going to be people who I interact with backstage that it means as much to me that they had a good time around me as maybe some of the audience members too. So I think that that's probably what I would really like. Sometimes that it's harder than other days, but overall, I think that that would be the way I'd like to be remembered.
I think that's really beautiful.
That is.
And not to ruin the moment, but I just thought it was so interesting that you pointed out on the silent meditation retreat, there wasn't sex involved.
Or me.
Because I've never heard of a silent meditation retreat. All sex all the time, but you got to do it quietly and think about what you're doing.
I already wrote down the bit where it's like, how did you think we were going to have sex?
That's so funny. We
were going to make eye contact and that was enough? That sounds like they needed way more help than just sitting with your breath than any of us were going to provide. Because, it was a really interesting, because they made a note of it every single day.
No sex.
No, oh my goodness.
No talking, no sex, no meat.
No sex.
Which sounds redundant.
Men were in different sides. Women were in totally different sides of this campus that we were in. They were in different dorms than us. And they were a ways away. And we were only allowed to be together in the silent meditation hall. That was it. There was no other time we were allowed to be around each other for the most part. Nor did we need it. We weren't even making eye contact with each other. That was one of the things. We weren't. So how the fuck were in the silent, our eyes are closed in the hall. There's no way. You could be the greatest seductor ever. And if you got laid on a silent meditation retreat,
It's from your pheromones.
It sounds like a challenge.
From your t-shirt sweat.
Game on.
Sounds like a challenge.
Challenge accepted.
Jeez, yeah. Oh my goodness. Thank you for that detail. So funny.
Robert Pitty, thank you for coming on the show.
It was really good to hear from you guys.
You have an album coming out, or came out. It came out. What's the title of it?
Driving at the Speed of Friendship. You can order it on Amazon and Apple Music. Also, I will be a featured person of interest in Costco Connection magazine coming up soon. So look out for me. I know, right?
I'm going to save that and have you autograph it.
It's probably my biggest credit as far as both me and my grandma are concerned. I will be putting it on posters, like right next to Sirius XM National Radio. I will put Costco on the top of it, and I have no question about that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I've seen in Costco. Yeah.
Sweet.
Black and a half.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Join us. Live long and prosper.